Books presents Time Enough for Love, Part 1, by Robert A. Heinen, narrated by Lloyd James.
Time Enough for Love, by Robert Heinlein, Part 1. This book is subtitled The Lives of Lazarus Long. The capstone and crowning achievement of Heinlein's famous future history, Time Enough for Love follows Lazarus Long through a vast and magnificent timescape of centuries and worlds, Heinlein's longest and most ambitious work. It is the story of a man so in love with life that he refused to stop living it, and so in love with time that he became his own ancestor. The following dedication appears in the book. For Bill and Lucy. Time Enough for Love. The lives of the senior member of the Howard families, Woodrow Wilson Smith, Ernest Gibbons, Captain Aaron Sheffield, Lazarus Long, Happy Days, His Serenity Seraphim the Younger, Supreme High Priest of the One God in all his aspects, an arbiter below and above, prescribed prisoner number 83M2742, Mr. Justice Lennox, Corporal Ted Bronson, Dr. Leif Hubert, and others. Oldest member of the human race. This account is based principally on the senior's own words, as recorded at many times and places, and especially at the Howard Rejuvenation Clinic, and at the Executive Palace in New Rome on Secundus in year 2053, after the Great Diaspora, Gregorian year 4272 of Old Home Terra, and supplemented by letters and by eyewitness accounts. The whole then arranged, collated, condensed, and, where possible, reconciled with official records and contemporary histories, as directed by the Howard Foundation trustees and executed by the Howard Archivist Emeritus. The result is of unique historical importance despite the archivist's decision to leave in blatant falsehoods, self-serving allegations, and many amoral anecdotes not suitable for young persons. Introduction. On the Writing of History. History has the relation to truth that theology has to religion, i.e., none to speak of. Lazarus Long. The great diaspora of the human race, which started more than two millennia ago, when the Libby-Sheffield Drive was disclosed, and which continues to this day, and shows no sign of slowing, may the writing of history as a single narrative, or even many compatible narratives, impossible. By the 21st century, Gregorian, on Old Home Terra, our race was capable of doubling its numbers three times each century, given space and raw materials. Footnote. Gregorian Terran dates are used throughout, as no other calendar, not even Standard Galactic, is certain to be known to scholars of every planet. Translators should add local dates for clarification. Justin Foote, the 45th. The star drive gave both. Homo sapiens spread through this sector of our galaxy at many times the speed of light and multiplied like yeast. If doubling had occurred at the 21st century potential, our numbers would now be of the order of 7 times 10 to the 9th times 2 to the 68th, a number so large as to defy emotional grasp. It is suited only to computers. 7 times 10 to the 9th times 2 to the 68th is equal to 2066-035-336-255-469-780-992-000-000. Or more than 2,000 million billion trillion people. Or a mass of protein 25 million times as great as the entire mass of our race's native planet, Sol 3, Old Home. Preposterous. Let us say that it would be preposterous had not the great diaspora taken place. For our race, having reached the potential to double three times each century, had also reached a crisis under which it could not double even once. That knee of the curve in the yeast growth law, in which a population can maintain a precarious stability of zero growth only by killing off its own members fast enough, lest it drown in its own poisons, commit suicide by total war, or stumble into some other form of the Malthusian final solution. But the human race has not, we think, increased to that monstrous figure, because the base figure for the diaspora must not be thought of as 7 billion, but rather as a few million at the opening of the era, plus the unnumbered, small but still growing hundreds of millions since, who have migrated from Earth and from its colony planets to still more distant places over the last 2 millennia. But we are no longer able to make any reasoned guess at the numbers of the human race, nor do we have even an approximate count of the colonized planets. The most we can say is that there must be in excess of 2,000 colonized planets, in excess of 500 billion people. The colonized planets may be twice that number. The human race could be 4 times that numerous, or more. So, even the demographic aspects of historiography have become impossible. Data are out of date when we receive them, and always incomplete, yet so numerous and so varied in reliability that several hundred humans, computers on my staff, can keep busy trying to analyze, collate, interpolate, and extrapolate, and to weigh them against other data before incorporating them into the records. We attempt to maintain standards of 95% in probability of corrected data, 85% in pessimistic reliability. Our achievement is closer to 89% and 81%, and getting worse. Pioneers care little about sending records to the home office. They are busy staying alive, making babies, and killing off anything in their way. A colony is usually into its 4th generation before any data reach this office. Nor can it be otherwise. A colonist too interested in statistics becomes a statistic himself, as a corpse. I intend to migrate. Once I have done so, I won't care whether this office keeps track of me or not. I have stuck to this essentially useless work for almost a century, partly through inducements and partly through genetic disposition. I am a direct and reinforced descendant of Andrew Jackson Slipstick Libby himself. But I am descended also from the senior, and have, I think, some of his restless nature. I want to follow the wild geese and see what is happening out there. Get married again. Leave 12 descendants on a fresh, uncrowded planet, then, possibly, move on. Once I have the senior's memoirs collated, the trustees can, in the senior's ancient idiom, take this job and shove it. What sort of man is our senior, my ancestor and probably yours, and certainly the oldest living human being, the only man who has taken part in the entire pageant of the crisis of the human race and its surmounting of crisis through diaspora? For surmount it, we have. Our race could now lose 50 planets, close ranks, and move on. Our gallant women could replace the casualties in a single generation. Not that it appears likely that this will happen. Thus far, we have encountered not one race as mean, as nasty, as deadly as our own. A conservative extrapolation indicates that we will reach in numbers that preposterous figure given earlier in a few more generations, and move on out of this galaxy into others before we finish settling this one. Indeed, reports from farther out indicate that human intergalactic colony ships are already headed out into the endless deeps. These reports are not verified, but the most virile colonies are always a long way from the most populous centers. One may hope. At best, history is hard to grasp. At worst, it is a lifeless collection of questionable records. It is most alive through the words of eyewitnesses, and we have but one witness whose life spans the 23 centuries of crisis and diaspora. The next oldest human being whose age this office has been able to verify is only a little over 1,000 years old. Probability theory makes it possible that there is somewhere a person half again that age. But It is both mathematically and historically certain that there is no other human alive today who was born in the 20th century. Footnote. When the Howard family seized the starship New Frontiers, only a few were more than a century and a quarter old. All of that few, save the senior, are dead, at times and places on record. I accept the strange and possibly mythical case of life and death of Elder Mary Sperling. Despite genetic advantage and access to the longevity therapies known collectively as the immortality option, the last died in 3003, Gregorian. By the records, it would seem that most of them died through refusing further rejuvenation, that being still the second commonest cause of death today. Justin Foote, the 45th. Some may question whether this senior is the member of the Howard families born in 1912, and also the Lazarus Long, who led the families in their escape from Old Home in 2136, etc., pointing out that all the ancient methods of identification, fingerprints, retinal patterns, etc., can now be beaten. True, but those methods were adequate for their time, and the Howard family's foundation had special reason to use them with care. The Woodrow Wilson Smith, whose birth was registered with the foundation in 1912, is certainly the Lazarus Long of 2136 and 2210. Before those tests ceased to be reliable, they were supplemented by modern unbeatable tests based first on clone transplants and more lately on absolute identification of genetic patterns. It is interesting to note that an imposter showed up about 3 centuries ago, here on Secundus, and was given a new heart from a cloned pseudo-body of the senior. It killed him. The senior, whose words are quoted herein, has a genetic pattern identical with that of a bit of muscle tissue removed from Lazarus Long by Dr. Gordon Hardy in the starship New Frontiers about 2145, and cultured by him for longevity research, QED. But what sort of man is he? You must judge for yourself. In condensing this memoir to manageable length, I have omitted many verified historical incidents. The raw data are available to scholars at the archives. But I have left in lies and unlikely stories on the assumption that the lies a man tells tell more truth about him, when analyzed, than does truth. It is clear that this man is, by standards usual in civilized societies, a barbarian and a rogue. But it is not for children to judge their parents. The qualities that make him what he is are precisely those needed to stay alive in a jungle or on a raw frontier. Do not forget your debt to him, both genetic and historic. To understand our historic debt to him, it is necessary to review some ancient history, part tradition or myth, and part fact, as firmly established as the assassination of Julius Caesar. The Howard family's foundation was established by the will of Ira Howard, who died in 1873. His will instructed the trustees of the foundation to use his money to prolong human life. This is fact. Tradition says that he willed this in anger at his own fate, for he found himself dying of old age in his 40s. Dead at 48, a bachelor without progeny, so none of us carries his genes. His immortality lies only in a name and in an idea that death could be thwarted. At that time, death at 48 was not unusual. Believe it or not, in those days the average age at death was about 35, but not from senility. Disease, starvation, accident, murder, war, childbirth, and other violences cut down most humans long before senility set in. But a human who passed all these hurdles still could expect death from old age sometime between 75 and 100. Very few reached 100. Nevertheless, every population group had its tiny minority of centenarians. There is a legend about old Tom Parr, who is supposed to have died in 1635, aged 152 years. Whether or not the legend... Nevertheless, every population group had its tiny minority of centenarians. There is a legend about old Tom Parr, who is supposed to have died in 1635, aged 152 years. Whether or not the legend is true, probability analysis of demographic data of that era shows that some individuals must have lived a century and a half. But they were few indeed. The Foundation started its work as a pre-scientific breeding experiment, as nothing was then known of genetics. Adults of long-lived stock were encouraged to mate with others like them, money being the inducement. Unsurprisingly, the inducement worked. Equally unsurprisingly, this experiment worked, as it was an empirical method used by stock breeders for centuries before the science of genetics came into being. Breed to reinforce one characteristic, then eliminate the culls. The family's archives do not show how the earliest culls were eliminated. They simply show that some were eliminated from the families, root and branch, all descendants, for the unforgivable sin of dying of old age too young. By the crisis of 2136, all members of the Howard families had life expectancies in excess of 150 years, and some had exceeded that age. The cause of that crisis seems unbelievable. Yet all records, both from inside and from outside the families, agree on it. The Howard families were in extreme danger from all other humans simply because they lived so long. Why this was true is a matter for a group psychologist, not for a record keeper. But it was true. They were seized and concentrated in a prison camp, and were about to be tortured to death in an attempt to wrest from them their secret of eternal youth. Fact, not myth. Here, the senior comes into the story. Through audacity, a talent for lying convincingly, and what would seem to most people today a childish delight in adventure and intrigue for its own sake, the senior brought off the greatest jailbreak of all time, stealing a primitive starship and escaping right out of the solar system with all of the Howard families, then numbering about 100,000 men, women, and children. If this seems impossible, so many people and just one ship, remember that the first starships were enormously bigger than the ones we now use. They were self-sustaining artificial planetoids intended to remain in space for many years at speeds below that of light. They had to be huge. The senior was not the only hero of the Exodus, but in all the varied and sometimes conflicting accounts that have come down to us, he was always the driving force. He was our Moses, who led his people out of bondage. He brought them home again 3/4 of a century later, 2210, but not into bondage. For that date, year 1 of the standard galactic calendar, marks the opening of the Great Diaspora, caused by extreme population pressure on old home Terra, and made possible by 2 new factors, the Libby-Sheffield Paradrive, as it was known then, not a drive in any true sense, but a means of manipulating n-dimensional spaces, and the first and simplest of effective longevity techniques, new blood grown in vitro. The Howard families caused this to happen simply by escaping. The short-lived humans back on Terra, still convinced that the long-lived families possessed a secret, set about trying to find it by wide and systematic research. And as always, research paid off serendipitously, not with the non-existent secret, but with something almost as good, a therapy, and eventually a sheaf of therapies for postponing old age and for extending vigor, virility, and fertility. The Great Diaspora was then both necessary and possible. The senior's great talent aside from his ability to lie extemporaneously and convincingly, seems always to have been a rare gift for extrapolating the possibilities of any situation, then twisting it to suit his own purposes. He calls it, "You have to have a feeling for what makes the frog jump." Psychometrists who have studied him say that he has an extremely high psi talent, expressed as forerunners and luck. But what the senior has to say about them is less polite. As a record keeper, I refrain from opinion. The senior saw at once that this benison of extended youth, although promised to everyone, would in fact be limited to the powerful and their nepets. The billions of helots could not be allowed to live beyond their normal span. There was no room for them, unless they migrated to the stars, in which case there would be room for each human to live as long as he could manage. How the senior exploited this is not always clear. He seems to have used several names and many fronts. His key corporations wound up in the hands of this foundation, then were liquidated to move the foundation and the Howard families to Secundus, at his behest, he having saved the best real estate for his relatives and descendants. 68% of those then living accepted the challenge of new frontiers. Our genetic debt to him is both indirect and direct. The indirect debt lies in the fact that migration is a sorting device, a forced Darwinian selection, under which superior stock goes to the stars, while culls stay home and die. This is true even for those forcibly transported, as in the 24th and 25th centuries. Save that the sorting then takes place on the new planet. In a raw frontier, weaklings and misfits die. Strong stock survives. Even those who migrate voluntarily still go through this second drastic special selection. The Howard families have been culled in this fashion at least three times. Our genetic debt to the senior is even easier to prove. Part of it needs only simple arithmetic. If you live anywhere but on old home Terra, and you almost certainly do if you read this, in view of the present miserable state of the fair green hills of Earth, and can claim even one member of the Howard families among your ancestors, and most of you can, then you are most probably descended from the senior. By the official family's genealogies, this probability is 87.3%. You are descended from many other 20th century members of the Howard families, too, if you are descended from any of them. But I speak here only of Woodrow Wilson Smith, the senior. By the crisis year 2136, nearly one-tenth of the youngest generation of the Howard families were descended from the senior legitimately, by which I mean that each linking birth was so recorded in the family's records and ancestry, confirmed by such tests as were available at the time. Even blood typing was not known when the breeding experiment started, but the culling process made it strongly to a female's advantage not to stray, at least not outside the families. By now, the cumulative probability is, as I have said, 87.3% if you have any Howard ancestor. But if you have a Howard ancestor from a recent generation, your probability climbs toward an effective 100%. But, as a statistician, I have reason to believe, backed by computer analyses of blood types, hair types, eye color, tooth count, enzyme types, and other characteristics responsive to genetic analysis, strong reason to believe that the senior has many descendants not recorded in genealogies, both inside and outside the Howard families. To put it mildly, he is a shameless old goat whose seed is scattered all through this part of our galaxy. Take the years of the Exodus, after he stole the new frontiers. He was not married even once during those years, and ship's records and legends, based on memoirs of that time, suggest that he was, in an early idiom, a woman-hater, a misogynist. Perhaps. Biostatistical records, rather than genealogies, when analyzed, suggest that he was not that unapproachable. The computer that analyzed it offered to bet me even money on more than 100 offspring fathered by him during those years. I refused to bet. That computer beats me at chess, even though I insist on a one-rook advantage. I do not find this surprising in view of the almost pathological emphasis placed on longevity among the families at that time. The oldest male, if still virile, and he certainly was, would have been subjected to endless temptation, endless opportunity, by females anxious to have offspring of his demonstrated superiority. Superiority by the only criterion the Howard families respected. We can assume that marital status would not matter much. All Howard families' marriages were marriages of convenience. Ira Howard's will ensured that, and they were rarely for life. The only surprising aspect is that so few fertile females managed to trip him when unquestionably so many thousands were willing. But he was always fast on his feet. As may be, if today I see a man with sandy red hair, a big nose, an easy, disarming grin, and a slightly feral look in his gray-green eyes, I always wonder how recently the senior has passed through that part of the galaxy. If such a stranger comes close to me, I put my hand on my purse. If he speaks to me, I resolve not to make wagers or promises. But how did the senior, himself only a third-generation member of Ira Howard's breeding experiment, manage to live and stay young his first 300 years without artificial rejuvenation? A mutation, of course, which simply says that we don't know. But in the course of his several rejuvenations, we have learned a little about his physical makeup. He has an unusually large heart that beats very slowly. He has only 28 teeth, no caries, and seems to be immune to infection. He has never had surgery, other than for wounds or for rejuvenation procedures. His reflexes are extremely fast, but appear always to be reasoned, so one may question the correctness of the term reflex. His eyes have never needed correction either for distance or close work. His hearing range is abnormally high, abnormally low, and is unusually acute throughout his range. His color vision includes indigo. He was born without prepuce, without vermiform appendix, and apparently without a conscience. I am pleased that he is my ancestor. Justin Foote, the 45th. Chief Archivist, Howard Foundation. Preface to Revised Edition. In this abridged popular edition, the technical appendix has been published separately in order to make room for an account of the senior's actions after he left Secundus until his disappearance. An apocryphal and obviously impossible tale of the last events in his life has been included at the insistence of the editor of the original memoir, but it cannot be taken seriously. Carolyn Biggs, Chief Archivist. Note: my lovely and learned successor in office does not know what she is talking about. With the senior, the most fantastic is always the most probable. Justin Foote, the 45th. Chief Archivist, Emeritus. Prelude. 1. As the door of the suite dilated, the man seated, staring glumly out the window, looked around. "Who the hell are you?" "I am Ira Weatherall, of the Johnson family, ancestor, chairman pro tem of the families."
"Took you long enough. Don't call me ancestor. And why just the chairman pro tem?"
The man in the chair growled. "Is the chairman too damn busy to see me? Don't I rate even that?" He made no move to stand, nor did he invite his visitor to sit down. "Your pardon, sire. I am chief executive for the families. But it has been customary for some time now, several centuries, for the chief executive to hold the title chairman pro tem against the possibility that you might show up and take the gavel."
"What? Ridiculous. I haven't presided at a meeting of the trustees for 1,000 years. And sire is as bad as ancestor. Call me by name."
It's been 2 days since I sent for you. Did you come by the scenic route? Or has the rule that entitles me to the ear of the chairman been revoked? I'm not aware of that rule, Senior. It was probably long before my time, but it is my honor and duty, and pleasure, to wait on you at any time. I will be pleased and honored to call you by name if you will tell me what your name is now. As for the delay, 37 hours since I received your summons, I have spent it studying ancient English, as I was told that you were not answering to any other language. If you will tell me what your name is now. As for the delay, 37 hours since I received your summons, I have spent it studying ancient English, as I was told that you were not answering to any other language. The senior looked slightly sheepish. It's true I'm not handy with the jabber they speak here. My memory has been playing tricks on me lately. I guess I've been sulky about answering even when I understood. Names. I forgot what name I checked in by when I grounded here. Woodrow Wilson Smith was my boyhood name. I never used it much. I suppose Lazarus Long is the name I've used oftenest. Call me Lazarus. Thank you, Lazarus. For what? Don't be so damn formal. You're not a kid, or you wouldn't be chairman. How old are you? Did you really take the trouble to learn my milk language just to call on me? And in less than 2 days? Was that from scratch? It takes me at least a week to tack on a new language. Another week to smooth out my accent. I am 372 standard years old, Lazarus. Just under 400 Earth years. I learned classic English when I took this job. But as a dead language, it enabled me to read old records of the families in the original. What I did since your summons was to learn to speak and understand it. In North American 20th century idiom. Your milk language, as you said, as that is what the linguistic analyzer computed that you were speaking.
Pretty smart machine. Maybe I am speaking it the way I did as a youngster. They claim that's the one language your brain never forgets.
Then I must be talking in a cornbelt rasp like a rusty saw.
Whereas you're speaking a sort of Texas drawl with an Oxford British overlay.
Odd. I suppose the machine picks the version out of its permanence closest to the sample fed into it. I believe so, Lazarus, although the techniques involved are not my field. Do you have trouble understanding my accent?
Oh, none at all. Your accent is okay. It's closer to educated general American of that time than it is the accent I learned as a kid.
I can follow anything from blue gum to Yorkshire. Accent is no problem. It was mighty kind of you to bother. Warming. My pleasure. I have a talent for languages. It was not much trouble. I try to be able to speak to each of the trustees in his native language. I'm used to swatting up a new one quickly.
So? Nonetheless, a courteous thing to do. I felt like an animal in a zoo with no one to talk to. Those dummies.
Lazarus inclined his head at two rejuvenation technicians, dressed in isolation gear and one-way helmets, and waiting as far from the conversation as the room permitted.
Don't know English. I can't talk with them. Oh, the taller one understands a little, but not enough for gossip.
Lazarus whistled, pointed at the taller.
Hey, you! A chair for the chairman. Chop, chop!
His gestures made his meaning clear. The taller technician touched the controls of a chair nearby. It rolled away, wheeled around, and stopped at a comfortable tete-a-tete distance from Lazarus. Ira Witherall said thank you to Lazarus, not the tech, sat down, then sighed as the chair felt him out and cuddled him. Lazarus said, "Comfortable?"
"Quite."
"Anything to eat or drink? Or smoke? You may have to interpret for me."
"Nothing, thank you. But may I order for you?"
"Not now. They keep me stuffed like a goose. Once they force-fed me, damn them."
"Since we're comfortable, let's get on with a powwow."
He suddenly roared, "What the hell am I doing in this jail?"
Weatherall answered quietly, Not jail, Lazarus. The VIP suite of the Howard Rejuvenation Clinic, New Rome.
Jail, I said. All it lacks is cockroaches. This window, you couldn't break it with a crowbar. That door, it opens to any voice except mine. If I go to the John, one of those dummies is at my elbow, apparently afraid I'll drown myself in the pot. Hell, I don't even know whether that nurse is a man or a woman. I don't like it either way. I don't need somebody to hold my hand while I go pee-pee. I resent it.
I'll see what can be worked out, Lazarus. But the technicians are understandably jumpy. A person can get hurt quite easily in any bathroom, and they all know that if you are hurt, no matter by what mischance, the technician in charge at the time will suffer cruel and unusual punishment. They are volunteers and are drawing high bonuses, but they're jumpy.
So I figured out. Jail. If this is a rejuvenation suite, where's my suicide switch?
Lazarus, death is every man's privilege.
That's what I said. That switch belongs right there. You can see where it has been dismounted. So I'm in jail without trial, with my most basic right taken from me. Why? I'm furious, man. Do you realize what danger you are in? Never tease an old dog. He might have one bite left. Old as I am, I could break your arms before those dummies could reach us.
You are welcome to break my arms if it pleases you.
Huh?
Lazarus Long looked baffled.
No, it's not worth a sweat. They'd have you patched up good as new in 30 minutes.
He suddenly grinned.
But I could snap your neck and crush your skull about as fast. That's one injury beyond the power of rejuvenators.
Weatherall did not stir, did not tense. I feel sure you could, he said quietly. But I do not think that you would kill one of your descendants without giving him a chance to parley for his life. You are my remote grandfather, sir, by 7 different tracts.
Lazarus chewed his lip and looked unhappy. Son, I have so many descendants that consanguinity doesn't matter. But you're essentially right. In all my life, I've never killed a man unnecessarily. I think.
Then he grinned.
But if I don't get my suicide switch back, I could make an exception in your case.
Lazarus, if you wish, I will have that switch remounted at once. But, 10 words?
Huh? Lazarus looked ungracious. Okay, 10 words, not 11.
Weatherall hesitated a split second, then counted on his fingers. I learned your language to explain why we need you.
10 by the rule, Lazarus admitted. But meaning that you need 50, or 500, or 5,000.
Or none, Weatherall amended. You can have your switch without giving me any chance to explain. I promised.
Huh, said Lazarus. Ira, you old scoundrel. You have me convinced that you really are my kin. You figure that I would not suicide without hearing what you have on your mind. Once I knew you had bothered to learn a dead language just to make palaver. All right. Talk. You can start by telling me what I'm doing here. I know that I didn't apply for rejuvenation. But I woke up here with the job already half over. So I screamed for the chairman. Okay. Why am I here?
May we start further back? You tell me what you were doing in a flophouse in the worst part of Old Town.
What was I doing? I was dying, quietly and decently, like a worn-out horse. That is, I was, until your busybodies grabbed me. Can you think of a better place than a flophouse for a man who doesn't want to be disturbed while he's busy with it? If his cot is paid for in advance, they leave a man be. Oh, they stole what little I had, even my shoes, but I expected that. Would have done the same myself under the same circumstances. Now, sort of people who live in flop houses are almost always kind to those worse off than they are.
Any of them will fetch a drink of water to a sick man. That was the most I wanted.
That, and to be left alone to close out my account in my own way, until your busies showed up. Tell me, how'd they find me?
How he found you is not the surprising part, Lazarus. But the fact that Sec 4, the cops? Yes, cops. That my cops took so long to identify you, then find you and pick you up. A section chief lost his job over that. I don't tolerate inefficiency.
So you busted him?
Your business. But why? I reached Secundus from out far. I didn't think I had left any back trail. Different everything since the last time I was in touch with the families, as I bought my last rejuvenation on Supreme. Are the families swapping data with Supreme these days?
Heavens no, Lazarus. We won't even give them a polite word.
There is a strong minority among the trustees who favor rubbing out Supreme instead of simply maintaining embargo.
Well, if a Nova bomb hit Supreme, I wouldn't mourn more than 30 seconds.
But I did have a reason for having the job done there, even though I had to pay high for forced cloning. But that's another story. Son, how did you pick me up?
Sir, for the past 70 years, there has been a general order out to try to find you. Not just here, but on every planet where the families maintain offices. As to how, do you recall a forced inoculation for Ryber's fever at immigration?
Yes. I was annoyed, but it didn't seem worthwhile to make a fuss. I knew I was headed for that flophouse.
Ira, I've known that I was dying for quite some time. That was okay. I was ready for it. But I didn't want to do it alone. Out in space. Wanted human voices around me, and body odors. Childish of me, but I was pretty far gone by the time I grounded.
Lazarus, there is no such thing as Ryber's fever. When a man grounds on Secundus, and all routine identifications show null, Ryber's fever, or some other non-existent plague, is used as an excuse to get a little tissue from him, while injecting him with sterile, neutral saline. You should never have been allowed to leave the skyport until your genetic pattern was identified.
So? What do you do when 10,000 immigrants arrive in one ship?
Herd them into detention barracks until we've checked them out. But that doesn't happen often today with old home Terra in the sorry state it's in. But you, Lazarus, arriving alone in a private yacht worth 15 to 20 million crowns...
Make that 30.
Worth 30 million crowns... How many men in the galaxy can do that? Of those who can afford it, how many would choose to travel alone? The pattern should have set alarm bells ringing in the minds of all of them. Instead, they took your tissue and accepted your statement that you would be staying at the Romulus Hilton and let you go. And no doubt you had another identity before dark.
No doubt at all, Lazarus agreed. But your cops have run out the price on a good phony set of IDs. If I'd have been too tired to bother, I would have forged my own. Safer.
Was that how I was caught? Did you squeeze it out of the paper merchant? No, we never found him. By the way, you might let me know who he is, so that...
And I might not,
Lazarus said sharply.
Not ratting on him was implicit in the bargain. It's nothing to me how many of your rules he breaks. And who knows, I might need him again.
Certainly someone will need his services. Somebody just as anxious to avoid your busies as I was.
Ira, no doubt you mean well, but I don't like setups where IDs are necessary. I told myself centuries back to stay away from places crowded enough to require them, and mostly I followed that rule. Should have followed it this time. But I didn't expect to need any identification very long. Confound it! 2 more days and I would have been dead, I think. How did you catch me?
The hard way. Once I knew you were on planet, I stirred things up. That section chief wasn't the only unhappy man. But you disappeared in so simple a fashion that you baffled the entire force. My security chief expressed the opinion that you had been killed and your body disposed of. I told him if that were the case, he had better start thinking about off-planet migration.
Make it March. I want to know how I goofed.
I would not say that you goofed, Lazarus. Since you managed to stay hidden with every cop and stoolie on this globe looking for you. But I felt certain that you had not been killed. Oh, we do have murders on Secundus, especially here in New Rome, but most are the commonplace husband-wife sort. We don't have many for gain since I instituted a policy of making the punishment fit the crime and holding executions in the Colosseum. In any case,
I felt certain that a man who had survived more than 2 millennia would not let himself be killed in some dark alley. So I assumed that you were alive. Then asked myself, if I were Lazarus Long, how would I go about hiding? I went into deep meditation and thought about it. Then I tried to retrace your steps, so far as we knew them. By the way, the chairman pro tem threw back his shoulder cloak, took out a large sealed envelope, handed it to Lazarus. Here is the item you left in a lockbox at Harriman Trust. Lazarus accepted it.
It's been opened.
By me. Prematurely, I admit, but you addressed it to me. I have read it, but no one else has. And now I will forget it, except to say this. I am unsurprised that you left your wealth to the families, but I accepted it.
It's been opened.
By me. Prematurely, I admit, but you addressed it to me. I have read it, but no one else has. And now I will forget it, except to say this. I am unsurprised that you left your wealth to the families, but I was touched that you assigned your yacht to the personal use of the chairman. That's a sweet craft, Lazarus. I lust after it a bit. But not so much that I'm anxious to inherit it so quickly. But I undertook to explain why we need you, and let myself get sidetracked.
I'm in no rush, Zara. Are you?
Me? Sir, I have no duties more important than talking with the senior. Besides, my staff runs this planet more efficiently if I don't supervise them too closely. Lazarus nodded agreement.
That was always my system. The times I let myself get involved. Accept the whole load, then shove the work off on other people as fast as I could pick 'em. Having any trouble with Democrats these days?
Democrats? Oh, you must mean equalitarians. I thought at first you meant the Church of the Holy Democrat. We leave that church alone. They don't meddle. There is an equalitarian movement every few years, certainly under various names. The Freedom Party, the League of the Oppressed. Names don't matter, as they all want to turn the rascals out, starting with me, and put their own rascals in. We never bother them. We simply infiltrate. Then some night we round up the ringleaders and their families, and by daylight they are headed out as involuntary migrants, transportees. Living on Secundus is a privilege, not a right.
You're quoting me.
Of course, your exact words from the contract under which you deeded Secundus to the Foundation. That there was to be no government on this planet other than such rules as the current chairman found necessary to maintain order. We've stuck to our agreement with you, Senior. I am sole boss until the trustees see fit to replace me.
That's what I intended, Lazarus agreed. But, son, it's your pigeon and I'll never touch that gavel again. But I have doubts about the wisdom of getting rid of troublemakers. Every loaf needs yeast. A society that gets rid of all its troublemakers goes downhill. Sheep? Pyramid builders at best. Decadent savages at worst. You may be eliminating your creative 0.1%. Your yeast.
I'm afraid we are, Senior, and that's one reason why we need you.
I said I won't touch that gavel.
Will you hear me out, sir? You won't be asked to, even though it is yours by ancient custom, if you care to pick it up. But I could use advice.
I don't give advice. People never take it.
Sorry. Perhaps just a chance to talk over my problems with a person more experienced than I am? About these troublemakers? We haven't eliminated them in the old sense. They're still alive, or most of them. Ostracizing a man to another planet is more satisfactory than killing him for the technical crime of treason. It gets rid of him without making his neighbors too indignant. Nor have we wasted him. Them, as we are using them to conduct an experiment. All transportees are shipped to the same planet. Felicity. Do you, happen to know it?
Not by that name.
I think you would have stumbled on it only by accident, sir. We have kept it out of public records in order to use it as a botany bay, huh? It is not as good a planet as the name suggests, but it is a good one, roughly equivalent to old home Terra. Earth, I should say, before it was ruined. Or much like Secundus when we settled here. It's rough enough to test a man and eliminate weaklings. Gentle enough to let a man raise a family if he has the guts to dig in and sweat.
Sounds like a good place. Perhaps you should have hung on to it. Natives?
The proto-dominant race are quite fierce savages, if any are still alive. We don't know. We don't even maintain a liaison office there. This native race is neither intelligent enough to be civilized, nor tractable enough to be enslaved. Perhaps they would have evolved and made it on their own, but they had the misfortune to encounter H. sapiens before they were ready for him. But that is not the experiment. The transportees are certain to win out over that competition. We do not send them empty-handed. But, Lazarus, these people believe that they can create ideal government by majority rule.
Lazarus snorted.
Perhaps they can, sir, Weatherall persisted. I don't know that they cannot. This is the experiment.
Son, are you a fool? Oh, you can't be. The trustees wouldn't keep you in office. But, how old did you say you are?
Weatherall answered quietly. I am 19 centuries your junior, sir. I will not dispute your opinion on anything. But I do not know, through my own experience, that this experiment will not work. I have never seen a government of the democratic type, even in the numerous times I have been off-planet. I've simply read about them. From what I have read, not one has ever been formed from a population all of whom believed in the democratic theory. So I don't know.
Lazarus looked frustrated. Ira, I was about to shove my own experience with such governments down your throat. But you're right, this is a brand new situation, and we don't know. Oh, I have strong opinions, but 1,000 reasoned opinions are never equal to 1 case of diving in and finding out. Galileo proved that. And it may be the only certainty we have. All the so-called democracies I've ever seen or heard of were either forced on the majority from above or grew up slowly from the plebes discovering that they could vote themselves bread and circuses. For a while, until the system broke down. I'm sorry I won't see the outcome of your experiment. I suspect it will be the harshest tyranny imaginable. Majority rule gives the ruthless strong men plenty of elbow room to oppress his fellows. But I don't know. What's your opinion?
The computers say.
Never mind computers. Ira, the most sophisticated machine the human mind can build has in it the limitations of the human mind. Anyone who thinks otherwise does not understand the second law of thermodynamics. I ask for your opinion.
Sir, I refuse to form an opinion. I lack sufficient data.
You're getting old, son. To get anywhere or even to live a long time, a man has to guess, and guess right over and over again without enough data for a logical answer. You were telling me how you found me.
Yes, sir. That document, your will, made it clear that you expected to die soon. Then, Weatherall paused and smiled wryly, I had to guess right without enough data. It took us 2 days to find the shop where you bought clothes to lower your apparent status and to conform to local styles, I think. I suspect that you bought your false IDs right after that. He paused. Lazarus made no comment. Weatherall continued. Another half day to find the shop where you lowered your apparent status much farther. Close to bottom. Too far, perhaps, as the shopkeeper remembered you. Both because you paid cash and because you were buying second-hand clothes that were not as good, even when new, as the ones you were wearing. Oh, he pretended to accept your story about a costume party and kept his mouth shut. His shop is a fence for stolen goods.
Of course, agreed Lazarus. I made sure he was on the crook before I bought from him. But you said he stayed zipped?
Until we, stimulated his memory. A fence is in a difficult position, Lazarus. He has to have a permanent address. This can sometimes force him to be honest.
Oh, I wasn't blaming dear old uncle. The fault was mine. I let myself be conspicuous. I was tired, Ira, and feeling my years and let it rush me into doing a sloppy job. Even 100 years back, I would have done a more artistic job. I've always known
that it is more difficult to lower your status convincingly than to raise it. I don't think you need to feel ashamed of the job as a work of art, Senior. You had us baffled for almost 3 months.
Son, the world doesn't pay off on a good try. Go ahead.
Brute force, then, Lazarus. That shop is in the worst part of the city. We put a cordon around the area and saturated it. Thousands of men, but not for long. You were in the third flea bag we checked. I spotted you myself. I was, with one of the raiding parties. Then your genetic pattern confirmed your identity. Ira Weatherall smiled slightly. But we were pouring new blood into you before the genetic analyzer reported your identity. You were in bad shape, sir.
I was like hell in bad shape. I was simply dying. And minding my own business. A practice you could emulate.
Ira, do you realize what a dirty trick you've done me?
A man ought not to have to die twice. And I was past the bad part and ready for the finale, as easy as falling asleep. Then you butted in. I've never heard of rejuvenation being forced on anyone. If I had suspected that you had changed the rules, I would never have come near this planet. Now I have to go through it again, either with the suicide switch, and suicide is an idea I've always despised, or the natural way, which could now take a long time. Is my old blood still around? Stored?
I will inquire of the clinic's director, sir.
That's not an answer, so don't bother to lie. You've put me in a dilemma, Ira. Even though I haven't had the full treatment, I feel better than I've felt for 40 years or more, which means either that I must again wait it out for many weary years, or use that switch when my body isn't saying, time to adjourn. You meddling scoundrel. By what authority No, you've got the authority. By what ethical principle did you interfere with my death?
Because we needed you, sir.
That's not an ethical reason, just a pragmatic one. The need was not mutual.
Senior, I have studied your life as thoroughly as the records permit. It seems to me that you often acted pragmatically. Lazarus grinned.
That's my boy. I was wondering if you would have the gall to try to twist it into some high moral principle, like a damn preacher. I don't trust a man who talks about ethics when he's picking my pocket. But if he's acting in his own self-interest and says so, I have usually been able to work out some way to do business with him.
Lazarus, if you will let us complete your rejuvenation, you'll feel like living again. I think you know that. You've been through it before.
To what end, sir? When I've had more than 2,000 years of trying everything? When I've seen so many planets that they blur in my mind? When I've had so many wives I can't remember their names? We pray for one last landing on the globe that gave us birth. I can't even do that. The lovely green planet I was born on has aged even more than I have. To return to it would be a time for tears, not a happy homecoming. No, son, despite all rejuvenation, there comes a time when the only reasonable thing to do is turn out the light and go to sleep. And you, damn you, you took it away from me.
I'm sorry. No, I'm not sorry, but I do ask your pardon.
Well, you might get it, but not now. What was this aching reason you needed me? You mentioned some problem other than the troublemakers you transport?
Yes, although it is not one that would have caused me to interfere with your right to die your own way, I can handle it one way or another. I think Secundus is becoming both too crowded and too civilized.
I'm sure of it, Ira.
Therefore, I think the families should move again.
I agree, even though I am not interested. As a thumb rule, one can say that any time a planet starts developing cities of more than 1 million people, it is approaching critical mass. In a century or two, we'll be fit to live on. Do you have a planet in mind? Do you think you can get the trustees to go along? And will the families follow the trustees?
Yes to the first, maybe to the second, probably no to the third. I have a planet in mind as Tertius, one as good or better than Secundus. I think many of the trustees would agree with my reasoning, but I'm not sure of the overwhelming support such a move would need. Secundus is too comfortable for the danger to seem imminent to most people. As for the families themselves, no, I don't think we could persuade most of them to uproot and move. But even a few hundred thousand would suffice. Gideon's band. You follow me?
I'm way ahead of you. Migration always involves selection and improvement. Elementary. If they'll do it. If. Ira, I had a hell of a time selling the idea to the families when we moved here back in the 23rd century. I could not have sold it at all if Earth had not become a dreary place. Good luck. You'll need it.
Lazarus, I don't expect to succeed. I will try, but if I fail, I'll resign and migrate anyhow. To Tertius, if I can organize a party large enough for a viable colony. To some planet colonized, but very thinly settled, if not.
Do you mean that, Ira? Or, when the time comes, will you kid yourself that it is really your duty to hang on? If a man has the temperament for power, and you have, or you wouldn't be where you are,